The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we welcome all of you to this Monday on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Thanks for being a part of what is always a special 4 hours. Good afternoon. And let's get started with some headlines. And over the weekend, quite a bit happened. How about a national championship celebration in Georgia? Yeah, if it sounds like we haven't said that in 41 years, it's because we haven't. Kirby Smart, the whole gang, in fine form.
I don't know if you paid attention to media days, but it popped out at me when I was thinking back to this season. Success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Henry David Thoreau. That embodies this team. They never embraced the success. They never acknowledged the success. You know what they kept doing? They just kept chopping wood. They just kept chopping wood. This program will never change from that quote. Because when you start looking for success, you start acknowledging success, is when you lose it.
Chopping wood, that's exactly what happened. How about Nolan Smith, star pass rusher? How about him? He said, you know what? Give me some more of that chopping wood. I'm coming back. So really, it was such a blast. You know, it was really, I thought, quite poignant. I saw a picture of this. All four former head coaches were there as well. Think about that. And considering all three of them three of the four were fired. Ray Goff, Jim Donnan, and Mark Richt were pictured with Coach Vin Stulley, who, of course, led the national championship quest 41 years ago. They were all pictured together. And, where else do you get fired as the head coach and still come back to celebrate on one of the biggest moments in the school's modern history? So that happened over the weekend in Athens. Greg Sankey, be careful, ACC. Greg Sankey will get an expanded playoff with or without you. Sankey over the weekend asked the crowd, hey, four teams weren't bad, were they? You like that? This is all about Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner. He's new. And speaking for his league, he said, we have significant concerns surrounding a proposed expansion model, though we'd be supportive of a future expansion once and if these concerns are addressed. The membership believes that we have a responsibility in looking at the CFP. And college football from a holistic, that's a word I don't hear very often. I see that on my medicine sometimes, but I don't see it on perspective, and not just whether to add more teams to a playoff. Collectively, we have much larger issues facing us and whether to expand the CFP early by 2 years. Commissioner Phillips, with all due respect, I didn't see you at the playoffs this year. Did I miss? I was in Dallas. I was in Indianapolis. I had friends that went to Miami. We didn't see you. We didn't see you or your teams. Maybe you should be concerned more about that than being holistic, whatever that means. Auburn. Now, would somebody tell me how the Auburn Tigers are not the number one team in the country? They got more first place votes than Gonzaga. They just missed out. We will talk to Bruce Pearl later. Something tells me he's probably not heartbroken, but it is a missed opportunity for the voters to get to recognize and respect the Auburn Tigers. Sylvester Croom, former Mississippi State head coach, longtime assistant at Alabama, selected to the College Football Hall of Fame. And we will talk to him in 25 minutes, and I cannot wait. He's always one of my favorite guests. I saw him recently, just one of the coolest people on the face of the earth. David Ubbin will join us, not to insinuate he's not cool. Matt Hayes and Bruce Pearl joining us in the final hour. Let's get to your phone calls now at 855. Oh, one more thing I wanted to mention. I was really sad to see this over the weekend. Somebody I covered when I was in college, and early in my career, Joby Hall, the legendary coach at the University of Kentucky, led the Cats to the 1978 National Championship and three Final Fours overall. He replaced Adolph Rupp, one of the toughest replacement successions in the history of sports. And he was really an outstanding coach and even a better human being. Got a chance to interview him a number of times and beloved by Kentucky people everywhere. Let's start the show with Jim from Tuscaloosa.
Paul?
Yes, Jim.
I don't know what I'm doing. I must be crazy. I got your book out. I never read the book. You sent it to me 7 years ago, and you wrote beautiful things. I was the best. You actually said I was the best caller in the history of the show. Did you know that?
I vaguely remember.
I guess you vaguely.
A guy with
the
publisher.
That's what you said, Paul. You said I was the best caller.
I did write that. Yes.
Do what?
I'm sure. If I said that to you, Jim, I meant it at the time.
I mean this. I see the picture. I never looked at these. You had a beautiful, really nice looking sister. She shows her and you with Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah.
And Paul, you were a good looking guy. I mean, you actually look like Elvis a little bit. You clear eyes,
yeah, I mean,
beautiful complexion.
Jim, this sounds terrible because I can't run away from what people are staring at right now. But when I was at that age, man, I could bring it. Now, I don't know what happened. But
I can see the girls all over you. In this picture where you look like you're about 18, 18?
Yeah, I was about 18 there.
Good-looking guy. I mean, really good-looking guy. Almost as good-looking as I was.
Jim, it's probably too bad that we were not running buddies at the time, but you were too young for that. But we would have been...
It really was. It really was. Probably. It would be too much. Two of us would be too much. It'd be like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I think you're right.
But I just had to call because when I saw I never looked at all this stuff when you sent me the book. I only read page 54, and it's unbelievable the things you said that I forgot. I didn't know. I knew you'd said I was the best caller, but you said other things, you know, about I changed the show. And
I've had people tell me this. My wife tells me this. The first thing you say usually is the right thing, not the convoluted version.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, without a doubt, I believe that. Then you get angry and you start changing your.
I've done that with you.
I said you were the best.
That would be the first annals of history. What I said there, I did.
I said about you. You're the best radio talk show host in history, in my opinion.
I thought of you today. I talked to Danny Sheridan about something, and we always bring you up when we're talking on the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When was this? I'm interested in.
Well, he agrees. I mean, he thinks you and Legend are.
I know that. I love Danny. Everybody loves Danny. When did you talk to him about that? Do you know?
I talked to him about 2 hours ago.
Hey, Danny, we miss you, man. I love Danny Sheridan. My sister is crazy about listening to Danny Sheridan. And every time, you know, you would have him on, she'd say, please call me and tell me if he's going to be on. I mean, my sister's crazy. Of course, everybody, I know you. If you can't have him on, so be it. But
well,
I'm just saying what I believe.
Like, written in stone. I mean, we might try to sneak him on one day while nobody's watching.
Well, I would think you should do that, and also Tim Brando. But I mean, Danny is just—he's great. He's funny. He's everything. He's knowledgeable. He's a classic electric guy.
Have you ever met him, by the way, Jim? I mean, he went.
Never met him personally. No, never. I don't care to meet all these people.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I just don't. I just don't know why I do that, but I just don't care about meeting anybody. What's the big deal? If I talk to you, it's the same as if I know you, I know you. You know what I mean?
Well, you're right. Yeah,
I know Danny.
You're right about that.
I know I'm right about you. I know Danny Sheridan, and he knows me. You know what I mean? Just seeing him in person, what's that going to change? That's not going to make him know me any better.
Not much. You're right.
It's just going to make him see what I look like.
Yeah, no, it's true. And nobody, that's not important.
No, it's really not important.
That's not important unless you look like I did back when I was 18.
Or like I do and have all my life. You look great, Paul. You really look great. I mean, I don't know if anybody – you ought to post it. Tell Cubes to post that picture
where people can see that.
I mean,
people don't give me enough credit, though. I mean, for being 85 years old, I think I look pretty young.
No, you're not 85. But when you lost your hair, you know, that was
definitely.
Your hair is great.
Jim, that happened right after that picture was taken. It literally fell out.
Well, your hair is great in this picture. I mean, you are a good-looking guy in this picture.
I could have been the fifth Beatle.
Well, you could have been Elvis's sidekick.
I could have been. It's too bad I wasn't.
Well, all right, Paul. I hope you have a good show. Yeah, I don't know if Archbishop is coming on or not.
If I looked like that, I would not have done what I ended up doing. I would have gone to Hollywood. No, I'd have been in soap opera.
You really would have gotten to Hollywood. I mean, a sitcom.
Yeah, no,
it wouldn't have been an argument.
It's just better off. You know, what's that saying? You know, thank God for unanswered prayers.
Yeah. Maybe so. Yeah. You might be right. Same with me playing ball. I would have probably gone to hell for all the pride I had about how good. But I didn't say one thing you said in there, Paul. I read it.
You said that I said
I was better than Ted Williams. Paul, I never said that. I've got the tape.
Okay.
I never said that. And you know it. All I said was, you asked me, Jim, do you think you could have been as good as Ted Williams? And I said, Paul, I think there's a chance I might have been had I not gotten hurt. That's all I said, because I had that kind of confidence in how good I could hit a baseball.
And I responded, you realize, Jim, that Ted Williams is considered the greatest hitter of all time.
And what does that matter? You didn't see me hit, Paul. You didn't see me hit. Let me tell you a story about a great poo player in Tuscaloosa real quick,
Jim,
and I'll let you go.
Hold on a second. Are you suggesting to me that you could have been better than Ted Williams or as good as Ted Williams?
I'm suggesting I might have been. All I'm saying, I didn't say I was. I never said I was better than Ted Williams. I just said I might have been had I not gotten hurt, because I could really hit a baseball, Paul, very well.
That's all I'm saying.
Is anything wrong with that?
I don't belabor this, but you have to understand what you're saying.
Ted Williams, as great as he was, he's still just a human being.
Yeah, he may be a human being, but he's the greatest hitter of all time. And you're suggesting,
all right, but how do you know somebody didn't come along after him that got hurt that might have been better than him, Ted, or at least as good, Paul? That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there because you.
I'm going to leave you with this, Paul. I believe with all my heart, had I played in the major leagues, I would have hit over 400. I know that. I believe that.
Okay, well then.
That's all I can say.
Jim will leave.
I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. I just said I know how good I was.
Okay.
I know how good I was at hitting the baseball. And you see it in my, you can hear it in my, I think you can hear it in my,
no.
In my, what?
Jim, we have to go to the break. Hey, thank you for the call. I think that's interesting to think about what he said there. He said, I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but had he not been hurt, he could have hit 400. Randy, you know how many people have hit 400 in Major League Baseball history? Not many. We're going to take a break. We'll digest that. We have Sylvester Croom coming up here in a couple of minutes, and we really look forward to that. Coming right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back. Sylvester Croom joining us shortly. We'll talk about him being selected to the College Football Hall of Fame and a few other things. Billy is in Philly, and you are on the air. Hello, Billy.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you, first time this year. Wonderful.
I want you to know that I listen regularly. I can't get in all the time, but I think you got a great show and it made my days very happier.
Thank you.
The note you wrote me, short note because I sent you something, is probably one of the highlights of my year. And
thank
you for doing what you're doing. I called because I saw on the news that you were attacked by, or we were attacked by a Midwestern football, basketball player, football player who said that going to a Southern school is wasting your time. I'm a PhD English teacher, but I've never taught in English departments. I've taught only in honors programs. So I've taught in two Eastern schools that are pretty good. Everybody recognizes them. They have, it's hard to get into them. And I taught honor students. That means I got the best freshmen, and then I got them again when they were juniors, their seniors. I decided that my young daughter, who was 8, and my wife ought to have an experience of seeing a Southeastern Conference football game. So I just said, I'm going to take you to Mississippi. So I called up the guy who runs the honors program, the Sally Barksdale program there, and said, would he visit with me? We could exchange ideas. So we went down and we did it. And we saw a game, and that was fun. But I saw him and I saw his program. The Barksdale program is so much better than the programs I was teaching in the Northeast. It's just not comparable. They have more money. They have better teachers. They're more focused. A big state school educates everybody. That doesn't mean that everybody gets the same education. And they were very fussy and are still fussy about who they take and what they do with them. I know some of the teachers because I've met them at academic conferences. They're just absolutely first rate. I mean, Yale PhDs who go to Mississippi because they get a chance to do their graduate work, but also the requirement, if you want to come down here and, you know, write books, you're going to teach our best honor students, and they do it. It's a terrific program, and I think that this is completely missed in the Northeast, where they just think they're better because they think they're better. They don't really actually work at it. And Ole Miss works at it, and I believe these other schools do too. I know a little bit about Alabama, nothing really technical about the other schools. That's what I wanted to say on that subject.
Well, Billy, you're talking about Kevion Thibodeau's comments, the Oregon player.
Correct.
And I did react to it because I don't know everything you know, but I do know about this university that he was referring to. I've spent a lot of time inside that university, in classrooms, and knowing people who do similar things to what you've done up east. And it was just such a lazy, dishonest remark. And you know, I don't know what I don't know all the context of it. And I don't know why he said it, but the South is labeled like that. And I grew up in a Northeast family. I heard it then from my own family members. So I understand how that perception has permeated many, many places up there. And you know it better than I do, because I didn't go to an Ivy League school or teach at one. But there is an attitude up there that is hard to scrape away. But I do appreciate your comments very much. It's really good to hear from you. Matt is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We are well, thank you.
First thing I want to say is I apologize to you because me and you got in a little bit of an argument during the Kentucky-Georgia game, like prior to the Kentucky-Georgia game, and I was asking why Kentucky didn't get enough respect.
Oh, right, I do remember
and
that.
And you, through all that, you know, who do we beat? Thing. But I do want to apologize because you were completely right. We lost to Mississippi State. We lost to Tennessee. Still had a good year, but, you know, we lost to those schools. I do want to ask you about Kentucky's football recruiting this year. What do you think about it, and how is Mark Stoops really, like, changing the focus of Kentucky football?
Well, Matt, he is, and I think he's doing it through recruiting, if I can survive this call. You know his staff, and he's got a couple of what I would call elite recruiters on that staff who have gone into Ohio, who have gone into other places and made a significant difference. The frustrating part of Kentucky is, for whatever reason, it seems like for all the hard work that is accomplished, they give it away every year in one or two games, and that has to stop before if Kentucky's ever going to make that final advance on the summit, but it is still a fantastic program, and I appreciate your call. We have somebody very special joining us in a minute. Coach Sylvester Kroom joins us on this Martin Luther King celebration holiday. We'll also talk about him being selected to the College Football Hall of Fame next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome all of you back, and it is with such great pleasure to welcome here on this Monday of Dr. King Day, the former head coach at Mississippi State, as well as the All-American at Alabama, and just recently elected to the College Football Hall of Fame, Coach Sylvester Kroom joining us. Coach, good afternoon. Thank you for your time and congratulations. I know it's something that you'll thank all the people that helped get you there. But regardless of what you're going to say, we are so proud to have seen that news and to say hello to you.
Well, Paul, it's very exciting. It's something that I honestly did not anticipate, and even after I was aware of the nomination, you know, you just. You know, it's almost 50 years, so you just don't know what to expect. But I am excited to be a part of it. And as you say, I have a lot of people who contributed to directly to me being in position to be able to receive this honor.
I know it's still many months off, but I would think it's something that I'm sure you've heard from a lot of your friends and family members. But when you heard the news, what – other than surprise, maybe, and a little bit, and happiness, what went through your mind as you reflected back?
Well, just a lot of things, but especially I had to, of course, think about Coach Bryant and going to the university and how things that I planned didn't work out. You know, I went there with the idea I wanted to be a tight end or a linebacker. And neither one of those things panned out because there were guys who came along that were just better at those positions, particularly George Pugh and Woodrow Lowe, which is fantastic. And and I was in the process of finding somewhere to play. I think, you know, in 1972, I was, you know, I showed up at practice one day. I was a starting tight end, and I showed up one day at practice and looked on the roster. I was a third string left tackle. And that's the way Coach Bryant did things back then. And it was a tough year in 72 for me because there was nowhere for me to play. And after the season was over with, I talked with Coach Bryant, and he wanted to move me to center. And I asked him one question, Coach, you think I can be good at it? And he said, yes. And he said, I think you can be very good at it. And that's the reason I moved. It was because of his confidence in me is what gave me the courage to do it.
Coach, what was it that sent a fledgling player in a fairly short period of time to a first-team All-American?
Well, you know, I went to Alabama to play for Coach Bryant because I played on a losing high school team. And, Paul, I never thought of myself as a great player. But the one thing I did always have taken pride in was that was in my work ethic and my competitive nature. And I wanted to be good. I wanted to be the best. And I wanted to get at a position where I had a chance to be the best. And I always liked having the ball in my hands. And that was a good way to do it, too. So, so even though I wasn't catching the football, I had the ball in my hands every snap. And once I got into the position and felt good about it, I mean, I worked extremely hard to be the best, trying to be the best center in the country because I wanted to be a great player. And it also motivated me of being around guys like John Mitchell and Wilbur Jackson and Musso and Hannah, you know, John Hanna had a tremendous effect on me. I don't even know if he knows this, but just playing with him as a sophomore, even though I wasn't playing a lot, just watching the way the guy worked at practice was unbelievable to me. And going into my junior, especially my senior year, I took the same approach. I made up my mind that I was going to play every snap on offense my senior year. That's what I wanted to do. And in order to do that, I had to be in the best shape of my life. And that probably was the best shape of my life. And that's what motivated me, Paul, was wanting to be a part of a national championship team and wanting to be the best player I possibly could be.
And Coach Kroom, after your playing days ended, you ended up spending a long time on Coach Bryant's staff. You stayed at Alabama when Ray Perkins came in. What were what were the early days like transitioning from one of his players to one of Coach Bryant's coaches?
Well, I thought it was tough playing for Coach Bryant, but I found out real quickly it was even tougher coaching for him. He was very, very demanding. Of course, great attention to detail. I learned real early that when you're a coach, Coach Bryant was grooming us to be head coaches. We were the head coaches of our position. Whatever happened in your position, it was your responsibility, good or bad. They didn't go to class, it was your fault. If they didn't play well, it was your fault. It was your responsibility. Let me put it that way. So you had to take care of your players and make sure that they were to function. It was your responsibility to develop them. And I learned that early on, and I enjoyed it. And I had great players. I'll tell you what, I had E.J. Jr. just got inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame last year. And then Mike Pitts, who recently passed away. I had guys like who didn't make All-American, like Gary DeNiro and Russ Wood. And then, of course, I had the great fortune of coaching Cornelius Bennett and Derek Thomas. You know, for a guy who had never played outside linebacker and had to coach him in his first job, I was very fortunate to have some really, really talented players.
We're talking to Sylvester Kroom, recently selected to the College Football Hall of Fame. And Coach Kroom, I heard you recently when we were together at this event in Birmingham with several of your teammates talk about what it was like during that time, you know, being among the first. You had a prism into Alabama football with your dad, who was the team chaplain and actually a really good football player in his own right. What was it like, for those who don't know that part of your story, to be among the first Black players at a place that we all know, you know, was in the news for the terrible racism and segregation that had gone on?
Well, Paul, it was a unique experience. First of all, going out to the university, growing up in Tuscaloosa, 5 minutes away from the campus, and yet never having really been associated with the University of Alabama. The closest I've come to being associated with it is going out there on campus to the Coliseum to watch playoff basketball games in the state tournament. And that was about it. I remember when I was a freshman, the guys who come from out of town would ask me where buildings were on campus. Hey, guys, hey, I've never been out here. I have no idea where things are. I might as well have been going to Southern Cal. It was that big of a leap. It was almost like going to school across country. But it was significant to me because of a chance to play for Coach Bryant, a chance to win. But I knew also that it was my way of contributing to the civil rights movement and to the changes that we were going through at the time. I had an aunt and uncle. James Orange was a chief lieutenant to Dr. King, was associated with him, marched with him. I saw a lot of people, relatives of mine and friends of mine, who had marched with Dr. King and who had made the physical sacrifices on the front lines of the civil rights movement during the 60s. And I was too young to be in the marches at the time, But when the time came to go to college, this was my contribution to the civil rights movement. And I think that's the way all of us felt. We wanted to get our education. We wanted to perform well on the field. We felt like we had to set a standard for those coming behind us, and we always felt a responsibility to be excellent because of the sacrifices that our ancestors and those who have come before us had made to give us this opportunity.
Coach Kroom, it was nearly 20 years ago when the entire sports world set its eyes on Starkville, Mississippi, when you broke the color barrier in the Southeastern Conference. And it was considered one of those indelible moments in history that would, in most of our minds, change the direction of black head coaches, not only in college football, but around football in general. Today, it doesn't look, I'll let you answer the question, like a lot has changed. You still see very few black head coaches. Your thoughts on where we are today?
Well, Paul, hasn't been enough change because I see it in the NFL, I see it at the college level, where qualified black men are not getting the opportunity to be head coaches. And that's disappointing. At the same time, I think the guys that the black coaches that have gotten the opportunity, I'm very happy for them. I see the new coach at Notre Dame. I'm hoping that they don't feel the pressure of having to make sure that of having to represent all black coaches. And I felt that responsibility. I felt like that I couldn't make any kind of mistakes, even in press conferences, that anything that I did or said would reflect negatively. Any mistakes that I made would reflect negatively on those who might have an opportunity to follow in my footsteps. But I am disappointed that there's not, I thought by now that would be more minority head coaches throughout the country, throughout the landscape of college football and the NFL as well.
You mentioned the pressure that you felt. Describe what that was like.
Paul, the biggest thing is, you know, it, for anybody, regardless of who you are, when you're a first-time head coach, you don't know what you don't know. And I used to tell assistants, and I tell young guys now, there's a long way from, you know, sitting in front of that desk to sitting behind that desk as a head coach. So you have to prepare. You have to be ready to take on duties that you did not know the head coach had to deal with, way beyond the football aspect. The football part of being a head coach is the easiest part. It's all the other things you have. You're responsible for so many people. And being a first-time black head coach, you know, hey, black coaches and black people who are the first have to deal with things that nobody else has to deal with. And they have nobody else they can talk to about it because nobody else understands. You know, white coaches have to have a tough job, but they got no idea what it's like to be in those positions and be a black man because things come at you from a different perspective that you have to deal with that nobody else knows anything about, and you have nobody else to go to talk to about those things. So you have to fend for yourself. No matter how much help you get, no matter how much advice you get from people, nobody else truly understands.
Coach, finally, before we go, I know a lot of people offered you advice. Was there any one piece of advice that you were able to gain that meant the most to you in that very difficult period?
Well, the person I did talk to quite often was Bobby Ross. Was a great mentor to me. He was my he gave me a chance to be an offensive coordinator when I was in the National Football League, and I continue to stay in touch with him. And I followed a lot of his example as far as the details of things. And the message he always gave to me, you know, he would always tell me this: hey, if you just be yourself, be who you are, and everything will be okay. And I'm fortunate in the fact, and one of the things that I was blessed with in Mississippi State when, you know, I got hired by Larry Templeton, and the administration that was there at the time, I got a chance to do things my way. It didn't work out the way I wanted it to, but I'm very proud of the fact that I was able to make decisions and do things the way that I wanted to do them. The plan that I had to develop Mississippi State, we had a chance to do that. And I think for the most part, we accomplished what I wanted to accomplish and put us in a position to win. We left there, I think when I left that class that I left there, I think it was 10 guys that played in the NFL in that class. And I was very happy. But the main thing was that we developed young men who are contributing to society now. They've got excellent families. They've got their degrees, and that's what I'm most proud of.
Coach Sylvester Croom, just recently elected to the College Football Hall of Fame. Always a pleasure to visit with you, Coach, and great to see you recently. Be well and hope to talk to you again very soon.
Take care, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. The one and only Sylvester Croom joining us as we head to the break. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We are back, and Greg is up next in Athens, Georgia. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How you doing? Long time no talk.
Well, thank you. Great to hear from you.
Yes, sir. I just got a couple things to say, if you got just a moment. I work for a company in pest control, Arrow Exterminators. Been there for 22 years. I'm a pest control tech. And I have got a lot of elderly black customers. And I enjoy sitting down with them and asking them questions about their past. And I know Coach Croom has went through that, and I know a lot of that history that he had to go through, from restaurants to bathrooms to being in the back of the line or the back of the bus, the whole nine yards. Such a class act for him to be the head coach that he was at Mississippi State. I just want to tell him first, I'm sorry for what he went through, but I'm so proud of how he become the person that he become. It's strength, it's intelligence, it's amazing. And on Martin Luther King Day, which is today, of course, I want to tell all the elderly black people that might be listening, I understand what you went through, I respect what you went through, and I'm sorry for what you went through.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for that kind comments. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.